Transmitting to you from Old Heart Radio.
Prepare to have your bones chilled and your hairs raised. It's the Whack Arnold's Brothers Podcast.
Welcome home.
Here we are. The Whack Arnold's Brothers have arrived. No.
I mean, I just, lately I've been putting all my songwriting into the Perkins, so I haven't thought about a new Whack Arnold's Brothers theme song.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, when Perkins calls, you answer, okay?
Yeah.
And when,
yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, my
you can't let down the Perkins restaurant.
My local Perkins is actually hiring right now for servers. So, you know, here in a week or two, I might have a new favorite server to go go see. So,
oh, dude, the fucking go down there and say hi to your favorite server, Perkins.
I also thought about maybe like getting like another part-time job, you know, serving a couple nights at Perkins, you know, getting that Perkins money.
Yeah, I'm just looking for a couple of shifts at Perkins. Okay, I'm just enough to cover my weekly sampler platters.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's one of the sweet benefits of working at a Perkins is that you get like one sampler platter a week or something?
That'd be rad,
dude. Yeah, hey, you could pick 3 Muzzy sticks, all right, for that sampler platter. Why? Because you work here. You're a valued Perkins employee.
Yeah, I wonder what they're, you know, I worked at different restaurants, and probably the cheapest was when I worked at Chili's. You could have something for free off the kids menu, which was like, why would I want that
off the kids menu?
And then everything else was 10% off, which is pretty lame. But most places I worked at, you know, like Red Robin, it was like a free meal per shift. Any local place I worked at, it was like just eat to your whim, you know. But yeah, the Chili's 10%, like,
bitch, that barely covers tax.
There should always be a free meal with every shift when working at a restaurant or fast food.
I agree. People that cheap out there are fucking assholes. Yeah, like, okay, like at my work, you get, basically you can drink, like you can, you know, while you're working, you can make yourself anything you want to drink, except for like a couple of things. Like, you can't just make yourself like a fucking blended drink for no reason, you know? But then they do, like, we have like a 20% discount, which is all right. And
like when you're not, like when you're not working.
Yeah, like if I walk in, I'm like, I just wanted to get some fucking, like, get a fucking mocha today, you know? Ha ha ha. I'm doing finger guns for some reason. Then they'll, you know, we'll slap my 20% discount on there. I don't know if it really like
is noticeable.
Yeah, it's one of those like, I thanks.
But yeah, you know, anyway. Some free drip while you're working, maybe a latte, you know, that's always nice.
Oh yeah, I always tell people to make themselves something to drink, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, I wonder what the Perkins discounts are. I wonder what kind of health insurance Perkins offers its employees, you know.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I wonder if you can get dental through Perkins as a regular full-time employee, or if you have to be upper management. They only want upper management to have good teeth.
I don't know, you'd think that they'd want, you know. It's a good question.
You'd think Perkins would care, that's for sure. Why? Because, you know, I'm just going to bring up a quick little tidbit about Perkins.
Okay,
before we dive into the movie, I just want everybody to know what Perkins does for the larger community, okay?
Okay.
So apparently, Perkins has teamed up with a program called Give Kids the World. And this includes them participating in this Give Kids the World Village, which is a nonprofit attraction in Kissimmee, Florida, designed to bring joy to critically ill children through a theme park atmosphere.
Ooh.
Yeah, provides a sprawling and fantastical candy-coated world where kids can explore vivid venues such as the House of Hearts, Mark's Dino Putt, and Julie's Safari Theater.
Ooh.
I don't know who the fuck Mark or Julie are, but...
I don't know. Maybe they're benefactors to the whole... It is actually really cool.
Hey, I just, you know, not only does Perkins have delicious and affordable family-style meals at a, you know, in a friendly environment, but they also give back. All right.
Yeah.
I think it's worth the corn dogs knowing.
Yeah. Off topic real quick. It's like probably like 3 or 4 months ago. I don't even know how I got into reading about this, but, I forget what state it's in, but there was this guy that had a disabled daughter that was in a wheelchair, and he's like a millionaire, and he, you know, was upset with theme parks and how they didn't really have many options for disabled people to ride rides. He like retired from whatever career he was in and built a theme park specifically designed for disabled people, and allows them to come to the theme park for free. So if you're disabled, you can get into the theme park for free. Maybe your mom, your dad, anyone in your family that's not, they have to pay, you know, whatever the price is. But I just thought that was crazy that this guy literally retired, spent his savings to create a theme park for disabled people. It's really cool story, actually.
That is actually super cool. See, that right there is a good human being. All right. That's wild, though.
Yeah.
And what a like cool idea to like continue to offer like disabled folks the ability to come for free, you know?
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of crazy,
the
movie we're watching today is absolutely fucking bonkers.
Yes, bonkers indeed. It is called The Manitou from 1978, I believe.
Yep.
And
it's apparently based off a book, so it'd be interesting to read the book and see how close they stuck to the source material.
That would be it's because,
you know,
this movie goes like wild, man. Like,
oh yeah. And kind of a weird note is, recently we reviewed Slaughter High, and we talked about how the actor that played Marty died of an intentional overdose like right after the movie was done filming. So the director of this movie, his name is William Girdler. He actually has an interesting filmography. He's got some horror movies like Three on a Meat Hook, Asylum of Satan, but he also directed a couple of blaxploitation films, including one called Sheba Baby that Pam Grier is in. But he died in a helicopter accident prior to this film being released. So kind of like a dark cloud.
Didn't even get to see the movie released, man. Yeah, that's kind of wild, honestly. Like, what the fuck is up with these random, like, deaths related here?
Another wild fact is that the actor that plays Harry, his name is Tony Curtis. He's Jamie Lee Curtis's dad.
What?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Legacy family right there.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even this movie is like a possession movie in a way, but it's also like it swirls around supernatural elements. Like, it has some body horror attached to it. Like,
yep,
it's just kind of
that is a good blend of the three for sure.
It's just kind of a wild movie, and you know, this, yeah, I mean, at first especially in like the right near the beginning, like when the, you know, like okay, so the movie opens up with the credits and all that, and then it goes right into like a scene where like the two main doctors are like discussing this growth, right? And they they mention in this scene that it grows by 7.3 millimeters an hour.
That's wild.
That's fucking crazy. And
yeah, Karen has a tumorous growth on her neck. That she's only had for 3 days at this point.
Yeah, that's the fucking crazy thing. So like, who are the two? It's like Dr. Hughes and what's his fucking name?
Dr. McAvoy.
They go out and meet Karen, who's like sitting in the waiting area of this hospital. Mm-hmm. And they go and look at the growth, and it's this fucking like, it's like a little bit bigger than like a golf ball. It's actually quite a bit bigger than, it's like two golf balls.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, when she says that she's only had it for 3 days at this point, you're just like, what the fuck is that? Like, and so
she also mentions something kind of weird that she says that it kind of moves or shifts as if someone was trying to get comfortable in bed.
Yeah. Like, I mean, huh? Exactly. That's like, it's like, how do you even like, what does that even fucking mean? Like,
right.
Like, that was an interesting like line of dialogue though, because it does kind of, you know, I feel like you immediately can like sort of understand that feeling as a person, because you know like shifting around to get comfortable in bed is definitely a thing. I don't know anybody that just kind of like plops down and like lays down that first time and then they're asleep, you know. Like, all right, well, you fucking Dracula or whatever, just cross your
arms. Good point.
But anyway, so it was kind of an interesting way to describe it, but you're just like, this like growth is moving. But so when the doctors go, like, they go to schedule an appointment for surgery because they're going to operate on this thing, see what the fuck it is. And they have this like moment where they both sort of like acknowledge the fact that it looks like almost like a fetus from the x-rays that they were looking
at. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, they talk about how it's malignant. They've never seen a tumor like this before.
Yeah.
And they think it might be a growing fetus. You're like, what?
Yeah, dude. And this is like the first 5 minutes of the movie. They're just dropping all this fucking, they're cracking these eggs of knowledge on you. And you're just like, holy shit. Okay, what the fuck is going on in this? Also, for like the briefest of moments, I was like, especially with the word malignant thrown in so early in this movie, I was like, does this have anything to do with the, like, is this like a possible influence on Malignant, the James Wan movie? And it definitely wasn't.
Possibly.
I mean,
maybe like very, very slightly.
But yeah, exactly. That after it all unfolded, I was like, maybe not. But, you know, tumorous growth, malignant. Either way, so. Yeah. So, like we said, they kind of basically, you know, they're going to schedule the surgery for this lady, Karen, to see, you know, how this, what's going on here. And the doctors both mildly suspect that it's a fetus, or they don't want to believe it. I mean, you wouldn't want to believe it either.
No.
Like it couldn't possibly be, but then it kind of transitions to this scene. You have like a nice trolley shot. There's multiple trolley shots in this movie to remind you that it's based in San Francisco.
Absolutely.
I mean, they should have just like had a Rice-A-Roni plug somewhere in here. Was Rice-A-Roni around in 78? You know, it's the San Francisco
tree. I guarantee you it was.
Dude. Do they?
It has to have been.
Rice-A-Roni needs to open a restaurant in San Francisco.
They have good, I mean...
Dude, I'll eat a box of Rice-A-Roni. No fucking.
Grew up on that shit, yeah. Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco tree. Yeah. Damn Skippy. But yeah, then we get introduced to another main character of the movie, Harry Erskine, who he's a fortune teller. I don't know what you want to call him. He's essentially a fortune teller.
He reads tarot cards.
Yeah, that's like a specialty.
Yeah.
He's meeting with a client, Miss Winkiness. He reads her tarot cards. You know, they sort of finish up their session, and he has this funny interaction with the neighbor, where Miss Winkiness like leaves. He like tells her this quote, and she leaves, and the neighbor says something like, "You need to come up with a new what'd she say? You need to come up with a new like bit, like
yeah.
That one seems a little tired," and he like basically says it back to her, like insinuating that she's a whore or something like that.
Yeah, he's like, "I heard your bit," like,
yeah. Yeah, and then he
I was just like, everybody in this fucking building's hustling.
I guess so, because yeah, he does make a mention like later in the movie that obviously, you know, like most people in that, I feel like that's always a thing in TV shows and movies where they're presented as, you know, they're hustling people.
Yeah. Well, like, but I mean, he leaves that interaction with his neighbor and like takes off his mustache that you learned it. So you learn it's fake, and just like slaps it on the wall and like, you know, immediately kind of like goes back to his regular life. So, you know, there is somewhat of what he does that's just like putting on a facade in a way. But I mean, I don't know. Like I don't know. It's reading tarot cards is like a skill that you develop, from my understanding.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I don't know. Maybe he can read tarot cards. Maybe he just, yeah. I don't know. But it's like funny that it is funny that he has like the classic shtick of like ritual. I'm gonna like, you know, con this rich old lady out of some extra money by giving her a magical motto to repeat every morning and stuff.
Yeah. Absolutely. But I like how he pops on some music. It's some groovy music. He pours a beer into a wine glass and sort of like, you know, like enjoys himself for a minute, like dances around. Then he gets a phone call from Karen, and you kind of get the assumption that they know each other from the past to some degree, but they haven't spoken in a while. And so they agree to meet up at the park. And that's where we follow the movie next, is they meet up at the park. You know, she mentions that he's the only person right now that she wants to talk to. And she sort of tells him about the whole tumor situation and how she's frightened about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is like kind of an interesting situation, you know, because you get the, like you were sort of saying, you get the vibe that they were very close at one point in time. And, you know, so it does kind of.
But it's never explained.
It is never explained. That was the thing. It kind of almost like bothered me a little bit, because I was like, what is the deal?
What's the connection?
Two?
Yeah.
She mentions that she goes to the, this must be. You know, one of those like, you know, non-profit religious hospitals or whatever. But she says she went to the Sisters of Jerusalem, which you just assume is the hospital that she went to. And for some reason, it just reminded me, and not that this is like a hospital either, but then it reminded me of the Knights of Columbus, where it's like, you know, like they provide like, they help people get like medical gear that they need and stuff like that. But I was just like, these names,
which is a good service. Yeah,
it is a good service for sure. But yeah, so they're having that talk, and then it transitions from them like in this park to another trolley shot where they're riding the trolley down through San Fran, and you know, kind of continuing on a more like personal level, kind of talking about like how they've been and stuff. You know, you get the vibe that she doesn't necessarily like approve of what Harry does, but she's also not like super put off by it. Just kind of like, I don't know. So you're like, maybe that was a riff, was like how they were choosing to live their lives, and so they
split. Like, you almost are led to believe that maybe they were working together at some point and she didn't agree. Yeah, that's kind of like the what I gathered from it. But you know, he, in their initial conversation, he sort of tries to reassure her that everything is going to be fine. Like you said, they, you know, they hop on the trolley, they go down to like a seafood market, and they continue their visit. You know, they have something to eat. I don't know what she's eating. She seems to be eating something out of like a paper cup, so I don't know if it's shrimp or it's not important. But long story short, they take it.
Sorry, this is a completely random story, but there is this old guy that I had to eventually kick out of the cafe named Steve LaFontaine, and I had to kick him out eventually because he would like inappropriately make comments to the female employees that worked there.
Oh, great!
So I was like, "Nah, dude, you just gotta fucking go." But anyway, he came in one day, and it was the most laughable situation. He came in one day with a like a red Solo cup. This was at like 8:30 in the morning. Okay, he came in with a red Solo cup filled with shrimp, got a cup of coffee, sat there, drank his coffee. Then when he was leaving with his cup of shrimp, he was like, "Well, I'm off to the courthouse."
What?
To this day, I scratch my head sometimes and go, like, why the fuck was that dude bringing a cup of goddamn shrimp to the courthouse? Was
to
he just, like, sitting in the back watching trials, like, popping shrimp back?
That's a good
fucking
question.
9 in the morning at that point, you know, like, you're just like, what the fuck is going on? Anyway.
That's a weird combination, shrimp and coffee.
Yeah, I was really hoping to see him dunk some in there, like those cocktails, like cocktail sauce or something.
Oh,
you know?
Fuck. I'm good on that, but that is weird.
Anyway, so Harry and Karen end up going back to Harry's place and having a romantic evening. Well, you know, it's
so we're led to believe,
because. You know, it's just kind of more of their personal talk. And then there's this scene where they're sleeping. They've both fallen asleep in front of the fireplace because, they, you know, of course, when you have a fire roaring, you got to bang in front of it. And so they probably got tired and, you know, fell asleep in front of the fire. But Harry wakes up.
Real quick, though, there was like a scene before this where they're having some wine. He wants to read her cards to see what they have to say about the two. And twice, like he flips over four cards, and two of the cards that are in the cards that he flips. So he's like, "Oh, that was just a practice. I'm going to do it again." And when he does it a second time, those same cards appear. And he sort of gets put off by it and decides to stop reading those tarot cards. So it's not really like important. Like it doesn't really factor in, but it is sort of like maybe a premonition of what's to come, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that was actually why it was kind of like a cool little blip there. You're just sort of like, ooh, more foreshadowing.
But yeah, continue with what you were saying.
So Harry hears in her sleep Karen repeating the phrase, oh my god, what was it? I had it right here. What? Oh my god, where did I write it?
Witchy Salatu.
Yeah. Hannah, yeah. Witchy Salatu. And like, you know, it's like she's repeating it a couple of times and he doesn't understand it. He's like, you know, the fuck is that? And it seems like, you know, the way she's repeating it is like, I don't know. It's kind of eerie, just in a way.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah. That's a good way. It's off-putting for sure.
Yeah. But then I guess maybe it's the next day or whatever. Then you kind of like see Harry dropping Karen off for her appointment, her surgery appointment.
Yeah, her surgery. Yep.
That's when at this point he asks her what the phrase, you know, Panna Witchy Salatu, if she's familiar with it, or if, you know, she, you know, he, if she even knows what it is. She does not. and he let her know that, like, yo, you were saying that in your sleep last night. And they joke about it being, you know, sounding like
she talks
like
about
it's
how she's never heard it before.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, and she seems to have no recollection, you know, of saying that, so.
Which is, you know, I mean, if she was asleep anyway, it's like, obviously she wouldn't fucking remember that anyway. But, you know, the fact that she has, like, no familiarity with it is, again, sort of like, what is up with this? But then you go into the surgery scene, the first surgery scene of the movie. And at this point, like, again, that lump on her fucking back, like, Karen's on, you know, on the surgery table. All the doctors are around with their gloves on, their limp-looking hands hanging out. And they're all, you know, they're prepping to, like, do, you know, this basically just like an exploratory surgery at this point, it seems like. But doesn't seem to go as planned.
Not at all. Not at all.
So what fucking happens here?
And I guess we sort of learn more later as to, you know, what was really happening. But it's like they go, Dr. Hughes is the one that's going to be, you know, cutting the tumor off or whatever they're doing. And, you know, he has a scalpel in his hand and you see a shot of Karen's eyes opening. It looks like the machines are fluctuating. And it's almost like he has no control over what he's doing and he's possessed because he ends up fucking gnarly, digging the scalpel into his wrist and slicing his own wrist with the scalpel.
Dude. And it's like a pretty, like, the pacing of it is like almost perfect, if you ask me, because there's so much tension in that, like how you're saying, like, it's like he makes it look like he doesn't have any control over it. Like, he's almost fighting and then, like, slowly, then all of a sudden, boom, like, you see him slice his wrist and you're just like, oh,
But he
also gets, like, almost, like, thrown backwards, like, off this incident, too, which is strange. Like, so you're like,
yeah,
you know, like, what is what?
There's definitely, like, something bizarre going on. So,
yeah. I mean, it was just
like I said, we'll obviously learn more later. But yeah, suffice to say, the surgery did not go as planned. And then we have an even weirder fucking scene. So one thing about this movie is, like, it really ramps up in the last, like, 30 or 40 minutes. But there are a couple standout scenes that happened before then. And this is one of them. So we follow up with Harry, who is meeting up, who has an appointment with Mrs. Hers. And she's an even older lady. Than the first one he was meeting with, you know, and she mentions how she's having problem with her arthritis and she struggles to sit down. Harry moves over to a table. He pulls out the cards to, as he puts it, to feel and know her. He asks how she is doing and she starts to whimper. But what happens when he starts reading her cards?
Well, dude, she goes like, at first almost like catatonic in her chair and you know, like a woman at her age, you got to be concerned that, like, there's got to be, you know, a health issue happening or something. Harry runs up to sort of like check on her, Mrs. Hers, and she starts like kind of like convulsing a little bit as she sits up and like screaming and it's like kind of like a seizure, but not, you know, not fully out of control, like not like on the ground, but you know, like her skin basically is like, I'm gonna call an ambulance, tries to get somebody on the phone, and then Mrs. Hers gets in this, like, I don't know, like she's like, it's almost like a dance at times, like but she starts repeating that phrase panna witchy salatu. And then goes out into the fucking hall.
Oh my God.
Screams at Harry and then floats down the hallway, like levitating off the fucking ground, floats down the hallway. and is thrown down the stairs, where she crashes through like all the banister.
Jesus. And
like, you know,
like, brutally.
Yeah, tumbles to her fucking demise at the bottom of the stair, it seems like. You know, she's like the shot where her body's kind of like sprawled out, and like there's a little bit of blood coming from her mouth or something, and her arms like kind of twisted over her head. And you know, it all looks really like, okay, one, the shot of her floating looked really cool.
It was pretty solid.
But in terms of like the movie, it like, you know, Harry's standing at the top of the stairs, like shouting, you know, like Mrs. Hers, and it like very well looks like he almost like could have thrown her down the stairs. You know, it was right. Such a mysterious circumstance, but
right.
You know, like, what do you even do when in yeah. that situation?
It's a good question.
Right?
Like, the way she gets violently like busting through, you know, like you mentioned, like busting through all the banisters on this handrail, like it was whatever force, you know, was pushing her down these stairs. It was a really strong force. It was just a crazy fucking sequence.
It was, man. Like, I was not like expecting that. Was like, this was one of those points in the movie where I was like, oh damn, I think I might like this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of that, like that levitation shot was, and then like leading to that like violent throw down the stairs, I was just like, what the fuck just happened? Like,
yeah, it was one of the best sequences of the movie for sure.
Yeah, it was crazy. And you actually don't really get much of a follow up off of that. Like, you don't, you know, it, basically the next sequence, the next scene is Harry talking to Dr. Hughes.
Yeah.
And you know, talk about Karen's condition and how the surgery went and how it didn't go, you know. You know, and Harry's just, you know, basically in this like expressing his concern, you know, being like, you know, there's something fucking going on. She was saying this weird phrase. A client of mine was thrown down these stairs in this crazy way. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. He's trying to, you know, he's sort of bringing up some of the weird, you know, aspects of it. And Dr. Hughes, you know, is like, what does this have to do with the medical aspects? You know, I don't deal with the spirit or the occult world.
Yeah, he's a Hughes tumor specialist.
Hughes tells Harry that she is stabilized, and like you said, lets him know that the surgery was unsuccessful, but he says it was due to her heart rate rising, etc. This is where he also tells Harry, you know, that I've been a tumor specialist for X amount of time. This case has me stumped. You know, this tumor has none of the characteristics of tumor growth. He once again describes it as a fetus. And that's when Harry asks the doctor if he believes in black magic, and that he thinks that something might be controlling Karen.
That would be such, like, I mean, especially talking to like a doctor, it would be so strange to like just turn the conversation and that would be like, well, do you believe in black magic? Because I think that might be what's going on.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, like, what fucking, like, especially after seeing what you just saw with Mrs. Hers, like, what the fuck do you know anymore? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Harry's like really intense though. Like, I will say, the guy that's playing him with Tony Curtis, he like, I don't know, there's something about his character that I really actually like.
Yeah.
Even though he's
super solid in the role.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, like you said, he's kind of like trying to feel out the doctor, you know, in this way, like sort of like, you know, do you believe in these things? Like, could it be that we're just, you know, experiencing some crazy supernatural event, you know, which is, mm-hmm. I don't know, just wild. But then they go and check on Karen, and she just seems fucking out of it. And like, I can't remember what sets her off, but there's this shot of her, like, where she, like, kind of, you know, starts moving a little bit in the hospital bed. And then she starts, like, making this, like, loud groaning noise. Yeah. And then she just shouts, like, Panna! And
Panna!
And, like, the shot transitions, like, off of her to, like, a shot of the Golden Gate Bridge. And which I actually thought was kind of, I like, sometimes like those kind of, like, weird, like, random transitions like that. But it was like, just such a strange scene. So you're like, clearly she's still, whatever's affecting her is still affecting her dog. But Harry.
Yeah, it was a frightening scene.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick, can we pause for a second? I apologize, but I have a roommate moving out. I just want to say goodbye real quick.
Yeah, no worries, man.
Yeah,
I was just looking at Keanu Reeves has this band called Dog Star that's been going. He's had it for a really long time, but apparently they're actually making music again, which I think is really, really kind of random. Anyway, so Golden Gate Bridge. Where do we find Harry? Kind of next on this adventure of his to discover what's happening with Karen.
Yeah, so Harry goes to meet up with another old friend of his, Amelia, who you know, seems to be someone that, you know, maybe dabbles in the occult, in the spirit world. We also meet her husband, MacArthur. Him and Harry meet for the first time. You know, Harry's basically there, you know, because he needs help. He, you know, fills her in on the situation and tells her that he needs spiritual help. And Amelia at first is like, you know, Harry, I'm sorry. I promised Mac that I wouldn't do this anymore. But Mac is the one that seems to be like, you know, this sounds like this girl needs help. Like, we should help.
He's like, use your mystical powers, bitch. I want to see this shit work. It was kind of like an interesting, you know, sort of turn there. Yeah. Like, Max in. And, you know, he's there in the next scene where, like.
Yeah.
So it's Amelia, Harry, Mac, and who? Oh my God! Who's that?
It's Amelia's. It's Amelia's aunt, Miss Carmen.
Miss Carmen. So
and
that
they're
was
heading.
Like,
continue. Sorry.
That was just like you don't really see Miss Carmen outside of this scene.
No.
But yeah. So like, you know, it's they're basically preparing to hold like a seance or something like that, where, you know, they're trying to call forth the whatever could be affecting Karen.
Troubling Karen, yeah.
Yeah.
And they do it at her apartment. So yeah, you know, it starts out like a typical seance scene. They turn the lights out, they join hands. Amelia starts the, you know, concentrate our minds on the spirits that occupy this room. You know, she starts performing a chant. Lights start to flicker as Amelia asks, are you here? Talk, speak, tell us who you are. And then Aunt Carmen starts saying the fucking phrase from earlier. This is where something really, really cool happens. And I wonder how they pulled this off.
This shit's fucking again, another moment in this movie where I was like, God damn, I think I like this movie.
Yeah.
Because like you said, like, all like, Miss Carmen starts chanting that Panna Witchy Salad too. And all of a sudden this mysterious green light is like glowing around them, which I loved. But then this, like, this, like it was just dipped in fucking oil or something. This like head, like all black, starts like popping out of the center of the fucking table. And it looks freaky, dude. Like,
yeah, kind of looks like a wooden statue almost.
Yeah, but it's just, I mean, like the way it rises, and when you see it eventually go back under the table, it's almost like it's coming out of liquid, which was kind of like dynamic. Oh, dude,
I wonder how they pulled that off.
Yeah, it was so cool.
They're talking to it, and you can see its lips moving, but you can't really make out what it's saying. It was a really fucking cool shot.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it.
I don't know how they pulled it off, but I fucking loved it.
Yeah. So the, like you mentioned, the head sort of goes back down through the table, and then out of nowhere, a nearby window fucking explodes.
Like, literally explodes. There's like a fireball attached to it.
Yeah. It's not a whole house exploding, but it's an explosion.
Yeah.
You know, there was a storm that was there. It kicks up. The wind is blasting in. It sends the chandelier spinning at like. And Harry's the one that gets up to turn the lights off, and it makes everything stop.
Oh yeah, and at one point a bolt of lightning like cracks into the room and blows this table apart.
That's
they were
right.
Just sitting.
Yeah.
It was fucking wild, but yeah, you're right. Like, Harry gets the lights on eventually, and just everything fucking like stops what it was doing.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And that's when they all kind of decide like, this seems like some fucking black magic.
Yeah, because it's like when after that all happens, it seems like Aunt Carmen, there's like something wrong with her, or like she's like feeling weak. You know, they sort of sit her in a chair. She talks about having a vision, a face that she saw. You know, Amelia mentions how whoever could do this has a vast knowledge of the occult. And Carmen talks about how it reminded her of a wooden Indian statue that sits outside of a saloon. And Harry, I don't know how his mind lands on this, but Harry brings up and talks about an Indian medicine man. Yeah. Random.
I thought that was
such
a random thing. So she's like, basically like, you know, there is like a Seinfeld storyline where Kramer gets a cigar shop Indian like statue. And but anyway, I just thought it was a really funny like random thing. Like it reminded me of this wooden you know, Native American statue. And then yeah, like that just jump where Harry's like, a medicine man.
A medicine man. Yeah, when I heard about the Indian statue, it instantly made me think of Creepshow 2, an old chief wooden head. but unfortunately, this movie doesn't have a killer Indian statue in it. It probably would have been badass if it did. But anyway, you know, so Harry and Amelia, you know, talk some more. And he brings up, you know, the test they did on Karen, and that she's going to die if they try to remove the tumor. And then MacArthur seems to have found an entry in a book. And he reads this entry about a medicine man, and talks about the Manitou impregnating themselves into someone else.
Yeah, dude. He's like talking about how they used to be like powerful with their magic, and yeah, like basically they could pass their spirit into or make, like you just said, kind of make their spirit and sort of like impregnate somebody else's body.
Wild.
Which is fucking crazy. You're just like, what the fuck?
Yep. Yeah. And then MacArthur, you know, brings up the author of the book, Dr. Ertis Snow. And Amelia brings up how he lives in Sausalito. So the next thing we know, the three of them are on their next stop on the destination, trying to figure out, you know, what's going on here. And they cruise on over to see Dr. Snow, who we learn is an anthropologist by profession. And while we're on the way, Harry brings up the fact that the tumor has now doubled in size.
Jesus. Which is just fucking crazy. So they, like you said, they go to meet, Dr. Snow, who mm-hmm. is played by Burgess Meredith. Which was super fucking funny. You know, you can, you know him as any number of things, but for me, it's the Penguin from the, you know, Adam West Batman. As well as Rocky Balboa's coach.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't realize that.
Dude has like a, you know, long.
Oh, yeah. He was in the cinema for a long time.
Yeah. But those are the two that definitely stand out to me. Okay. But anyway, so yeah. So they go and meet him and. You know, he's basically like he, you know, like some of the things he tells this, you know, tells Harry and Amelia and Mac, you know, is that like, you know, one, he doesn't necessarily personally have any knowledge of like magic or anything like that. He's like, I'm an anthropologist. I just like, you know, documented these things because of that. And but he does describe to them basically what Mac had kind of previously touched on, you know, in his book. Where he's like, yeah, there were, you know, powerful, you know, medicine men who could do all sorts of crazy shit. And one of the things he mentioned was that, you know, they give him like the phrase, the whole like the phrase like Karen's been on, you know, saying and whatnot, the pan of witchy salad to. And he sort of recognizes it from an old Native American tribe that has been extinct
for 400 years.
Yeah. And he eventually like is able to sort of decipher what he thinks it might mean, which is roughly my death foretells my return.
Yeah, pretty ominous.
Dude, yeah. Pretty ominous. Also his the professor's fucking office or wherever he takes them to learn more about this, the one that like he writes down the phrase and tries to decipher it, is like this like dusty cobweb filled fucking office space full of like old artifacts and shit. I was like, what is that? Like somebody needs to go.
Yeah,
to this,
I know. He's like,
the
place we're going to be going is full of cobwebs. But like throughout this whole time, he does also, you know, mention how some of these legends are, you know, they're folklore. So it's like, you know, he has some information on this, but he's not maybe even sure himself like what is real or what is not.
Yeah.
But like you said, he tries to, you know, to the best of his ability, translate that saying. And he also says that, you know, there's only one way that they can conceivably save her. And he says, have you heard of fighting fire with fire? And this is when Harry gets the idea of, you know, bringing in a medicine man to help. Because if anyone that's maybe watched this movie or seen it on Shudder, you know, as the movie depicts, it's about a woman that, you know, has a tumor, and there's a 400-year-old medicine man that's reincarnated from it. So we know that's coming. But it's just crazy how just a second ago, in that first scene where they're talking about the wooden statue, and Harry's like, oh, a medicine man. And now off of one thing that someone says, Harry's like, oh, we should get our own medicine man to fight him. Like, what?
Yeah, dude. Like, He's just jumping at the opportunity. He just wants to meet a medicine man,
I guess.
The professor basically tells him, you know, like there's only a handful of people of actively participating in like those practices, and you basically he tells him you'd have to go to like the reservation in South Dakota to go to find one. And which, like, you know, you're in San Fran right now, so that's going to be a little bit of a trek.
Quite a trek, yeah.
But you know, at least like they get some information that they think they can follow up with through, you know, from the professor.
Right. Which was the whole goal. So. Yeah.
But then you go back to the hospital where Harry and Hughes are fucking talking again, and you know, this is where like Harry, you know, him and Harry, he, like Harry presents the idea to him of like the things that he's just experienced and learned, and the doc, and you know, he's like, you and I have something in common, Karen Tandy, and like we're trying to get her better, and like he's like going on this rant and stuff. But then like, you know, the doctor lets him know that there's another operation underway, and
yeah, with a fucking laser.
And I mean, like, what, like, what fucking unfolds next? Because like that's the crazy thing. So like, it's like they're there, they're talking, then like something just alerts them, and they go bolting off the operation room.
We see like a group of people gather around this door. This alarm's fucking going off. We see in the room, and like Karen's like standing in a corner. You know, she doesn't seem to be doing very well, but we see that this like medical grade laser that's just going absolutely fucking haywire. You know, it destroys pretty much everything that was in the room. And I believe at one point it even blasts the door down. You know what I mean? Luckily, nobody gets killed in this scene, but it causes quite a good amount of destruction. At this point, Karen's growth, you know, has gotten even bigger. It's into this phase now where it's gnarly. It's like five times the size of that it originally was. And she seems to be, I don't know if possessed is the word. Possessed, you know, she's speaking in a different, her voice is different than what it normally was. And she says, they must not touch him. You must not touch him. So, you know, there's something going on here.
Yeah, she's crazed, man. And like you said, like
he will kill you all.
The fucking growth on her back is fucking gnarly at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, she like says all that. Then they, you know, she kind of like freaks out a little bit, and then they, you know, classic kind of sequence. The medical staff pin her down, and they dope her up with something, and to calm her down, and you know, then you have like the scene with the doctor and Harry, where they basically just agree that they need to fucking try something, you know.
Because
the laser didn't work out.
Right.
This was a moment in the movie where I was just like, what doesn't this movie have? It's got like some weird, some body horror, a little light body horror so far. It's got these crazy supernatural elements, and we've gotten an explosion and now a laser. So
yeah, it's been pretty satisfying so far.
This movie's wild. But based on their conversation, this then sends Harry, presumably, to South Dakota.
Right. Yeah.
Where
he goes looking for John Singing Rock.
Yeah.
And you know, Harry talks about how he went to five other medicine men already. You know, they talk about a few different things. Singing Rock asks him what he knows about herbs and how amazing they are. He asks him, what does a white man want with Indian magic? Harry brings up the 400-year-old medicine man. And this is when Singing Rock talks about Gitche Manitou, and that it's the spirit of a great medicine man, possibly in his fourth or fifth reincarnation, and that each time he lives, he has strength. And the more lives he's lived, the more powerful he is. You know, and he sort of talks about
crazy
how it can't be stopped. All you can do is revert the spell and send it back to where it came from. And that they might have to wait until it leaves her body. And then her spirit would live in the medicine man. It's a lot to take in.
Yeah. It's just wild that he knows what he's he knows what Harry's talking about. He's just like, yeah. It's probably this fucking thing. This 400-year-old shaman spirit that's been reincarnated four or five times already. Like,
oh, craziness.
But eventually, you know, so at first he's saying, he makes it seem like he's really not interested in helping Harry. He's just fuck off.
I don't need your money.
Like, yeah. But, you know, at the last minute, he seems to have a change of heart where he then tells Harry that his price is $100,000 to be gifted to the Indian Education Fund. And then Harry's like, you know, like, I don't know where Harry has this money, but he's just like, sure, okay, whatever. But what do you want? And he's just like, I don't know, some more tobacco because I'm almost out. But I mean, I thought that was just, what a cool move though on Standing Rock's part, Singing Rock, where he's just sort of like, I want $100,000 to this education fund.
Yeah.
I don't need your fucking money. Yeah.
Right.
I was like, hell yeah, man. But yeah. So, you know, it seems like the South Dakota, trek pays off because.
Totally.
You get back to San Francisco and, you know, you go to, you're in Karen's hospital room now. And in comes, you know, Harry, John, and Dr. Hughes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they basically get John set up to do what he can. You know, he talks about how he's going to draw a circle around the bed to, you know, sort of enclose it. And that, you know, they need to make sure not to fucking cross it or, like, brush it.
Absolutely.
Because it'll become
useless, he says.
Exactly. I also like this line. John has this moment where he's like, it's like, hope is for fools and something else. You know, he's not having it. You can't, he's like, there's mm-hmm. some shitty stuff happening and we're gonna, like, well, this is magic, man. Like, it's just,
this is how we're going to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah. So, yeah, he puts the ring around the bed. He has like a weird sash. And he has like two bones that have hair on them. That's a part of the ritual. You know, he starts knocking the two bones together. He starts praying to Gitche Manitou, hear me and protect me, he says. You know, Karen's eyes open in this scene as Singing Rock continues to speak with the spirits, but, you know, Karen once again possessed, your medicine is of no consequence. And this is where we learn the name of the spirit that is inhabiting Karen, Miss Squamicus. And, you know, Singing Rock seems to be taken back by the revelation of this. And he tells the group that he is the he's the greatest medicine man of all, and that nothing can help them. Miss Squamacus, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Yeah, it's wild.
Dude, and like, yeah, the distortion on Karen's voice and everything now is just like sinister sounding. And yeah, I mean, fuck, dude. Like,
We also learned that the spirit wants revenge on white people, and on Singing Rock for helping the white people. So there seems to be a lot at stake here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's not even just like, it all of a sudden is like not even just about Karen's life. You know, it's like, if this thing comes to fruition, what the fuck could like happen? I mean, there's clearly some like wild magic at play here. So,
yeah,
you know, like,
100%.
Dude, it does suck that he gets sucked into it, though, where it's like now the spirit wants revenge on him for being for helping them.
Yeah.
Dude, homie was just trying to do the right thing, okay?
Yeah. You gotta give him kudos for that.
Yeah. But, you know, so, like, basically they're, like, now keeping an eye on the situation. You know, there's kind of a scene where Harry goes to maybe get some fucking Advil or whatever the fuck it was from a nurse, you know?
Yeah, there's, like, a nurse, like, sitting in Karen's room.
Yeah, and so it's, like, now it's definitely, like, you know, a little later into the night, and all of a sudden some shit goes down, dude. So like,
yeah,
fucking, I can't remember if it's like a scream that drives him back to the room or whatever, but like Harry, like,
he's just walking by.
Okay. Yeah. And he just looks in the window and the fucking nurse that was in there is like bloodied and on the ground, to like,
because his supposedly head first, his face comes bashing through the mirror. His face comes bashing through the glass, you know, window on the door.
Fuck, dude, that's right. He comes like,
and that leads them into the room,
and that's where you find out that the nurse has supposedly been skinned, and is like, that's why it's all blood. He's all bloody on the ground. And then, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. This sequence was fucking crazy. So, like, you know, Harry and John enter the room.
Yeah.
There's blood splatter on the walls. Karen is, like, on her stomach with her back kind of arched in the air. And, like, the fucking lump is gigantic now. You know, John's trying to like summon, like, you know, any sort of fucking power or spirit to like, you know, give them the upper hand in the situation. And
yeah,
oh my God, dude, like,
yeah,
like, I don't even like, it's just so gnarly, to be honest. Like you see the skin on Karen's back start moving, and like all of a sudden this, you know, eventually, oh my God, this rip in the skin, and this hand starts coming out, and oh my God, Karen's just like almost like frozen in probably pain and fear at the situation, just kind of wailing as this body starts climbing out of her back.
Jesus Christ.
And it's like nasty and juicy and bloody and like gross. It's, oh my God, dude. Like, I honestly haven't seen something like that in a movie in a while, I feel like, that like made me as like uncomfortable.
It was unsettling. Yeah. It's like this slimy, long-haired, native-looking dwarf creature that fucking just emerges from the tumor in her back. Holy fuck.
Oh my God, dude. It's fucking insane. And it's this Misquamacus or whatever, and
yeah, Misquamacus, yeah.
And like you said, dude, it's like, I don't know, like a 3 foot tall, like deformed humanoid entity.
And oh man, like, it's so cool,
dude. It's, oh my God, like, it's just,
yeah, just the scene of it just fucking ripping its way out of her back was fantastic.
It was so impressive, honestly. I was just like, fuck, dude. I'm just like, that's another one of these parts in this movie where I'm like, I wonder how they like really pulled that off. Like,
true,
you know, like, anyway, but yeah,
because the creature seems to claw its way out. and then it closes its eyes to, you know, seems like it's, you know, obviously exerted a lot of power in what it just did. Yeah. So now it needs to restore itself. And that's sort of what Singing Rock mentions. You know, he talks about how now we wait, because once he gains his strength again, he doesn't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and to be honest, like, with the crazy shit that's happening right now in this hospital, like, I am so surprised at how weirdly calm and accepting everybody is of the situation. Like, yeah, like, there's a certain direness, you know, that everybody acknowledges, but, like, the doc and Harry come just, like, back up, you know, and, like, oh, okay, so this, you know, so this shit's appeared now. Did it break the circle? All right. Well, what are we gonna, like, it's just, I don't know, like, I would be freaking out, like, if,
right, yeah.
Shit happened, dude.
We also get another interesting bit of conversation where Dr. Hughes, you know, wants to call the police, and Singing Rock is like, you know, that's a bad idea. If the police come, he will use the Manitou to turn the gun against the police and kill them, just like the scalpel was turned against you. Singing Rock,
he brings up the idea that these machines and these other things besides, like, people have this Manitou, which is like spirit, right? And so, like, that was kind of strange at first. I was like, all these machines have spirits?
What? Yeah, it was interesting.
But yeah, so, like, so it, you know, like you said, he basically tells, he throws that back in Hughes's face, like, no, you can't do that. Like, you're going to get a bunch of people fucking killed.
Yeah. You know, they Singing Rock also wants him to clear the floor, and we learn that she's the only patient that's up here, so that's convenient. We also noticed that there's, like, a storm that's still raging outside. And the next thing we know is there's another male nurse that's keeping an eye on the medicine man dwarf, which I would not have signed up for.
Oh, bro.
And pretty soon, you know, that was a bad decision. Not only is this person watching him, but the nurse that's watching him falls asleep, which is probably not a good idea. You know, while we see this guy keeping an eye on the medicine man, the other three talk. Singing Rock talks about how absolute devastation is going to happen if they don't stop him. And the next thing we know, we're back in the room, and Miss Misquamakis's eyes open, and he reanimates the fucking dead nurse. Dude. So he has some powers, you know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. Like, that was crazy. Like, I mean, like, literally, like, that slow creeping kind of thing happens where it's like the nurse's body starts stirring a little bit, the dead nurse's body starts stirring a little bit, then all of a sudden it gets up and, you know, still bloodied and everything, and yeah, just sort of starts, like, slowly making its way to the other alive nurse.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, man, like, that shit's crazy. You also, like, Karen at this point also just is, like, laying in the bed, just, like, face down. You just assume she's fucking dead, basically.
Yeah, we don't know, right? Yeah.
But you have this shot of her where, like, this Misquamakis or whatever, like, possesses her, and, like she, like, sort of sits up a little bit. And in, you know, in this distorted voice, you know, starts talking about how I feel pain and I will destroy you. And
yeah, you have defied me.
Yeah. Also, her back looks fucked up. Like, mm-hmm. like the skin is all fucking ripped and, like, you know, stretched out and stuff. It's just, like, gnarly.
Cause yeah, that happens after, cause, you know, the reanimated corpse makes its way towards the alive nurse, but right as he's about to strike, the nurse wakes up, screams, so the other three run, and Singing Rock seems to, like, strike the reanimated nurse down.
Yeah, he basically, nothing happens with the dead corpse. Like, he gets really close to the other nurse, Singing Rock, like, pulls the alive nurse, like, out of the way, and then, like, bops the dude with one of his like bones or whatever.
And then and then that's where the scene happens where the possessed Karen says all this stuff, and then she seems to fall back asleep. And then Miss Quamacas is able to break the sand circle, maniacally laughing while doing so. And yeah, he starts.
That, I mean, that was a cool shot too, though. Like the sand or whatever that the circle is made out of, like just starts like parting by itself.
Yeah. There's some good effects in this movie. And then there's some not so good ones that we'll get to. Like right here, there's this scene where he starts chanting something. The other nurse runs off to get a flashlight. And next thing we know is we learn that he's summoning an ancient demon, but not sure which one. And then we get a superimposed image of a lizard. It was pretty badly done.
It was pretty cheesy. I mean, I know it's 78, but it was pretty bad.
And yeah, so long story short, this like lizard that he summons, not only does he summon this lizard, but Dr. Hughes also seems to be transfixed again and you know, not able to control himself. And he sort of like reaches closer to the lizard, and the lizard bites his hand, like severely disfiguring his hand before disappearing. I would say this scene, and there's a scene near the end with some really bad special effects. Otherwise than that, it's a really, all of the practical effects are super, super solid.
I agree. So yeah, Hughes is all fucked up, and John's basically like that was just, you know, one demon. There's far worse out there that we don't know if this entity, the shaman, can summon or not.
Right.
So, you know, Harry whisks Dr. Hughes away to get his hand fucking, you know, looked at, and they end up, you know, a bunch of like they you know, end up bringing him to his office or whatever. But when Harry,
oh my goodness,
like comes back to the floor where Karen's on, like I don't even know, like he gets back up there and he gets off the elevator, and it's like he's walked into like an ice cavern that is like frozen over parts of this hospital wing. And, you know, it's all like misty. And like I said, there's like, you know, like giant fucking chunks of snow and ice, it seems like, everywhere. And the nurse,
the
receptionist nurse that was on the floor is like frozen in place with like her arm raised. And like, I don't even, what the fuck, dude? Like,
yeah, the stakes have been raised for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, Harry runs back to Karen's room, looking for John. And that's, you know, he finds John, kind of like slumped over. And he's, you know, he took a beating. He's like, I tried to stop him, tried everything, you know,
he inflicted, he hurt me with surgical instruments.
He gave me a face full of surgical instruments.
Yeah. And we don't see the full extent quite yet of like the damage to his face, but yeah, we're led to believe that he got hurt to some extent. So they leave the room, and obviously, like anyone would be, they would be curious as to why this whole entire part of the fucking hospital is like a frozen wonderland. And he asks what caused this, and John talks about the Star Beast, the spirit of the North Wind.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, you know, there's been explosions, but all these nearby like windows and pieces of glass start to explode, and in this great fucking shot, Harry gets thrown backwards into the receptionist, decapitating her head from her body, sending her head flying backwards through a glass fucking window. Holy shit.
It was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. And like, yeah, the shot of the fake head going through the window is so funny.
Yeah.
And then like the little Ms. Marcus like shaman dude like starts kind of like appearing. And at, like, I mean, after this whole, like, you know, getting thrown back incident, like, Harry, I don't know why he thinks he's gonna like fight it off or something, but he picks up like a typewriter and like hurls it at the little shaman, and like I think the typewriter explodes also in this scene.
Yeah, but it works.
Yeah, and like it does make him disappear.
Yeah, it seems to have, you know, maybe weakened him or, you know, sent him away for a little bit. So who would have thought that, you know, throwing a typewriter at him would have been helpful. But yeah, just a shot of her fucking, the fake decapitated head flinging backwards through a glass window was great. You know, that's always a great shot.
Yeah. Anytime a movie of this caliber has multiple explosions in it. Oh, mwah.
Great. Yeah, they seem to have quelled Miss Quimacus for the moment, so they head back down the elevator to the doctor's office. And this is where McAvoy tends to John's facial wounds.
Which are pretty, you know, a little more, you see like a little more of that you know, extent of the damage that, on John, you know, his face is pretty bloodied.
Yeah. And John at this point, you know, talks about how, you know, everything they've done up to this point, they've just been they've been beaten. He's tried calling every spirit. And Harry, you know, is like, well, what about Gitche Manitou? And before they can really even discuss that, this like, it's not even, I wouldn't even call it, it's like an earthquake on steroids.
Well, right before that, though, there's one of my favorite moments in this movie. Harry, who has been able to do like nothing really in this whole situation, he's like, you know, John just says like he's been trying to call these spirits, and Harry goes, well, I'm gonna call them. And then he like starts like he's beelining towards the door, and he goes, collect, like he's gonna call
God. I forgot like, about that.
Like, shut the fuck up, man. Like, what the fuck are you gonna do in this situation?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, you're right. And then all of a sudden, like, I mean, like, the whole hospital starts fucking, like, shaking. And like you said, it's almost like an earthquake is happening or something. It's actually like a really cool scene, like all like the commotion that starts like in the office, and like it's knocked everybody over.
Yeah,
and, like, the way it looks like being shaken and stuff was pretty cool.
Yeah, it almost looks like the floor is like a, you know, like waving up and down, you know, because it's causing things to fall in weird angles and
yeah
it's just kind of more showing the strength of this creature or the spirit or whatever you want to call it. And after the earthquake sort of stops, John tells them it wasn't an earthquake. Miss Quimacus has called the Great Old One and talks about it being a powerful satanic demon that is coming through a portal right now. So as if, you know, the stakes weren't raised enough, shit's really about to hit the fan.
Yeah. But then the idea that Harry has
is
if you ask me, just out of left fucking field. So like at some point they've kind of come up with the hypothesis that technology has an effect on this shaman.
Because he brings up. He brings up, you know, how the typewriter, you know, seemed to hurt him.
That's what I think is so funny. It's like, yeah, this like typewriter I threw at him, like, see, like, it seemed to impact him in some way. Like, so, like, I don't know why it's such a laughable stretch. But then he's like, doctor, how many fucking machines do you have in this place? Because at first he double checks with John. He's like, John, didn't you say that machines have Manitous of their own?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you could. Yeah, man.
Yeah, you could use the Manitou of all the machinery, you know, at once to take him down.
And that's his pitch. He's like, "Doctor, how many machines do you have in here? X-rays and computers and all this and the blah, 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 blah." And he's like, "What if we turn them all on at once and directed that Manitou at this, you know, Ms. Marcus or whatever?" And
It's an idea.
Like Perkins is a place to eat. This is an idea.
I was just going to say that. Because, Hughes is like, you know, we have enough energy in here to, you know, power a small city. So that's the plan.
So bombastic to me.
Harry talks about, you know, give me 5 minutes before you power on all the fucking machinery in the whole entire building. And so him and Singing Rock head off to go back to Kieran's room. And that's what they do.
Oh my God. I love this whole sequence, man. So like, they go through the hospital wing. It looks like a fucking ice cavern. It's all darkened in there. They make it to Kieran's room. But like, when they step through the door, it is like they are all of a sudden, like, you know, I don't know, in some pocket of time and space that is not a hospital room.
It is no, like, not at all.
They're like amongst the stars. And in this area, they're standing there against the doorway. Kieran's hospital bed with Kieran's body is still in it. And this Miss Glamarcus is floating in the air
and with the great old one like channeled behind him.
Oh my God, dude. And so like, you know, good versus evil, it's about to go down. Singing Rock is like, okay, so Dr. Hughes is like starting to fire up all the hospital's machines, and Singing Rock is calling forth all their technological manitous. he's like send this motherfucker back, like, you know, get like, he's like trying to like channel them to attack or take away Miss Glamarcus. And at first it doesn't seem to affect the cat though, because Miss Glamarcus is just sitting there like it is with a weird little like, you know, like deformed face, like like mocking.
Doesn't
them.
Do shit.
John even calls it machine. He's like machine Manitous. Like, send it back. I was just so blown away by this. But like, there's all this like electricity starting to surge and stuff, right? And you see these like, you know, bolts of electricity like zap and zap 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 like all over this like weird space-time dimension. But what happens when you next come up with Dr. Hughes?
Okay, because it's incredible. So it doesn't see, you know, this whole ploy doesn't seem to have worked when it comes to warding off Miss Glamarcus, but it does work when it comes to, you know, causing the machine that is powering all of the machines in the hospital to explode. Whoa. And not only does that explode, but fucking Dr. Hughes explodes into like a million fucking pieces. It was so unexpected. It was just like, holy fuck. He literally just like, literally looks like, if you were to take a human being and put like 3 or 4 landmines into parts of their body and then have them go at once and just like,
yeah, dude, it was like, exactly.
So
it was like,
unexpected.
It was like he just kind of like blew to just complete chunks. Like, it was crazy. Like,
yeah.
It was such a wild moment in the middle of all of this.
Oh, it was. And, he gets blown to Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
And this also causes Harry and Singing Rock to get flung backwards as well out of the room.
Yeah.
While that happens, you know, Miss Glamarcus is still laughing his maniacal laugh. And this is where Singing Rock sort of, you know, basically has accepted defeat. You know, he's tried everything that he could try and nothing has worked. But Harry doesn't want to seem to give up. And it's such a wild last scene, because it's like Harry walks back into the room and it seems like the machine's Manitou like focused the power through Karen.
Yeah,
all of a sudden, a topless, we get a tit shot, you know, 2 hours and fucking like 14 minutes into this movie, or like, sorry, it's like an hour and 30 minutes into this movie, excuse me. We get, you know, Karen Stant like sits up from her hospital bed. She has great tits, by the way, completely unrelated. But what happens next? Because, oh my God, this scene is,
I love
the special effects really take away from it.
Oh, I loved it so fucking much, dude. It was so like you said, Karen sits up and like Miss Quamacus sees this, and there's this one like particular shot where he's like almost like got that look on his face, like he's just so dumbfounded, like, like what's going on here? And Karen, who is, like you said, somehow like all this Manitou energy from the machines is channeled through her, starts blasting lasers at like Miss
purple lasers
from her hands. She's trying to zap this motherfucker. And Miss Quamacus is like shooting, or like the great demon or whatever the fuck it is like shooting like fireballs back at her that look like flares. And then there's these like shots of like John and Harry, like, you know, in the door frame, and there's these like small rocks getting launched at them and stuff. It's all so cheesy looking. There's like,
it's awful.
Oh, that's so fucking bad. There's shots of like the machines are starting to like overload and explode, and again Karen's just like fucking just blasting this demon entity back to wherever
the great old one, yeah,
it just came from. And
her facial expressions are pretty cheesy in some of this too, where it's like, you know, she'd shoot a blast and then she'd wait a second and then like open up her eyes and like shoot another blast. Like, it was, you know, once again, it's 1978. The effects, you know, they just don't hold up, and it really detracts from the scene, unfortunately.
But like throughout this entire movie, leading up to the culmination, leading up to this moment, I did not see like a laser fight in space time go down, you know what I mean?
Not at all.
It's just like, I kept watching this, watching her shoot lasers out of her hands, just being like, how the fuck did we get here?
I will say, it's cool though that, like, you know, Karen was the one that got taken over by this and had a creature emerge from her back. So it's cool that at the end, she was the one that was able to, you know, take some power back and eradicate not only Miss Quamacus, but, you know, the great old one as well. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it's a cool, like, kind of a commentary on, like, reclaiming your fucking 100%. Power, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
It was just such a wild-ass scene. Like, I just am still just, like, trying to wrap my head around it, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of wild scenes in this movie.
But so like, you know, so like we said, she blasts the old one back to fucking oblivion, and then it seems like you know, like the room kind of goes like ends up back to normal, like disheveled and shit, and like
there's still like blood on the wall. Yeah,
and there looks like there's like maybe like a smoldering remains of that, like, you know, Miss Quamacus creature that was there or something. But there's like, but Karen seems to be alive.
Yep.
You know, like her and Harry have this like embrace. And that was so like, that was also kind of crazy. I was like, so somehow this like all like led to her like being brought back, yeah, or whatever, because she seemed like she was fucking dead
for a second absolutely there, you know?
But then you know, like, so from there it basically kind of settles down. Like, you have this scene where, you know, Harry walks John out to a cab, and John is leaving back to South Dakota, you know? And that's kind of just where it ends, you know? It just ends with like them defeating this shaman and this great spirit, and
Yeah, Singing Rock does have an interesting line at the end, though, where they're saying goodbye, and Harry's happy that this whole thing is over, and Singing Rock sort of mentions, the body is dead, but the Manitou lives on, and we might see him again someday. So,
yeah, because I mean, like he said earlier, like maybe he's on its like fifth fucking reincarnation cycle. You never fucking know. Mm-hmm. That shit's crazy. Yeah, the end credit was bonkers, but I was gonna say there is, and I would love to try to look this up, but there's a quote unquote fact that appears before the credits really start rolling, and it says Tokyo, Japan, 1969. A 15-year-old boy developed what doctors thought was a tumor in his chest. The larger it grew, the more uncharacteristic it appeared. Eventually, it proved to be a human fetus.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what the fuck? I mean, like, I could definitely see that being a influence on this story, if it's really true. But that shit's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a wild movie, man. There, like we said, there was just so many wild aspects of the movie. It was overall a really fun movie. There's some good, there's some bad, there's some cheesy, there was some fun, there's a couple good deaths, there's some good practical effects, so it was definitely a fun movie to discover and watch for the first time.
Oh, absolutely, man. Like this, it was a very entertaining movie. Some really actually cool effects and some just interesting just kind of random events all throughout it that really made me just like, honestly, like I will watch this movie again at some point just because I got such a kick out of it.
Oh yeah, it was definitely.
it is kind of a pretty unique movie in that way, where I have not seen this whole like kind of storyline, growth leads to literally somebody coming crawling out of your fucking body, and then fucking spirit laser fight like at the end. This is a wild one.
Yeah, it was a nice change of pace for sure.
But we gotta rate it somehow. So how would you rate this movie on your scale?
Entertainment-wise, I would give it like an 8. Traveling from North Dakota to California to ward off a ancient medicine man demonic spirit for a bag of tobaccos out of 10. What about what about you?
Similarly, entertainment wise, I really enjoyed this movie. I would give it probably, 8 out of 10 Machine Manitou laser spirit blasts.
Ooh.
Because it was a surprising movie. There's some really cool stuff. The storyline's batshit fucking crazy. and it culminates in the weirdest possible way, if you ask me. The most standout thing in this movie, aside from like the crazy explosions that happen, was probably that scene, the seance scene where the head comes out of the table. Like that was a really cool sequence, as well as like Miss Quamacus is like emergence from Karen. Like, that was so disturbing in a lot of ways. So, yeah, dude, like, definitely like an eight, pretty high, 8 out of 10, you know?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap it up, I'm gonna give you a couple of quick Perkins options. I'm looking through their pie section, some of their pie offerings right now.
Okay.
And if you could choose between a coconut cream pie, a caramel apple pie, or what is described as a peanut butter silk pie.
Ooh.
What would you choose?
I think I'd have to try the peanut butter silk pie.
Oh, you're goddamn right, dude. That's where I'm at too. I was like, peanut butter. It says layers of chocolate, peanut butter, real whipped cream, and miniature chocolate peanut butter cups.
Yeah, that sounds good.
God dang, Perkins, get in my mouth.
Want some of those pie offerings? Yeah.
Yeah, give me those Perkins pie offerings.
What other kind of pies they got right now?
You know, they got the always classy lemon meringue for $15.99 for a whole pie. They also have, you know, a wild berry pie and, you know, always tasty cherry pie. And of course, we cannot forget that I believe the strawberry freshtable is still going on. So they're offering fresh strawberry pie by the whole pie or by the slice, and a strawberry cream cheese quote mammoth muffin. So you know,
I forgot about the strawberry freshtable. That's right,
man. God dang, I wonder if they do multiple freshtables throughout the year. Do they do like a blueberry freshtable?
I think that's a good question.
Yeah, when's the apple freshtable? Cherry freshtable.
I mean, we are in Washington State, so
Do they do like pear freshtables?
They should do a Mozzie freshtable.
Ooh, yeah, when the Mozzie like sticks Mozzie are ripe and ready to pluck off the Mozzie tree.
Yeah, Mozzie burger, you know.
Ooh, dude. Have you ever seen what's his name? Oh my god, never. There's like this YouTube guy who does the Aki way. He runs a bodega in I think New York, and he makes sandwiches in his bodega, and he says he makes it the Aki way, and almost every single sandwich he makes has a layer of like three or four Mozzie sticks on it. Dude's got a strong Mozzie game, almost as strong as Perkins, so you know. Go out there. We'll wrap up the episode here, episode 87 here. We'll wrap it up with, a quick reminder to go out and get your sampler platters from Perkins and listen to the Whack Arnold Brothers while you do it.
Watch some horror, you know, get you some Perkins.
You can get Perkins to go. You can get Perkins to go and watch horror at your house.
Yeah, that's a good combination.
But then you won't be able to say hi to your favorite server. So
that's true. That's true.
One of the all-time favorite Perkins.
Yeah, you got to go see your favorite server while they're working. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you're tight with one of those wonderful Perkins servers, they might give you extra gherkins in your salad. So,
yeah, you know. You never know.
Oh god damn, dude. I think one of my new favorite lines though, because I listened to that like randomly, your Perkins jingle, and I think it's just so funny, but I love the line. Was it like, you can get a sampler combo, we'll do the mamba.
Yeah. Just dancing the mambo in the middle of Perkins.
Yeah, your favorite server drops your sampler combo off at the fucking table and you just get up and start dancing the mambo.
Yeah. Yeah, they gotta be. If they're not dancing with you, you know what I mean? You might be in the wrong Perkins.
You're goddamn right. Oh.
All right. Well, corn dogs, we'll leave it there. We'll catch you on the next one.
Yeah, happy Memorial Day.
Peace.
Yes, we will.